This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome to Required Listening. I'm your host, Scott Goldman, Executive Director of the Grammy Museum. Each week in the Clive Davis Theater, I have the opportunity to speak with artists from across the musical spectrum about their influences, their inspirations, their struggles, and their creative process. With Required Listening, I'm excited to share these discussions with you. On today's episode, my conversation with the band Weezer. Drawing from the heavy pop of arena rockers like Cheap Trick and combining doses of 70s heavy metal from bands like Kiss, they became one of the most popular groups to emerge from the post-grunge scene. They infused their music with a quirky sense of humor that made songs from their debut album like Undone the Sweater Song, Buddy Holly, and Say It Ain't So into big modern rock hits. Over two decades, the band has now released 11 albums and has become a vehicle for the imaginative songwriting of Rivers Cuomo. We got together after they released the White Album. The album is very much Weezer channeling the sunniness of the Beach Boys through their own sardonic filter. Rivers has often acknowledged the Beach Boys' influence on his music, and we spent a good deal of time talking about the process of working with producer Jake Sinclair in making the record. It's not necessarily easy to remain a band after 20 years, but these guys still express excitement about playing shows and a strong desire to continue to experiment with their music. So let's go to the Clive Davis Theater and listen to my conversation with Patrick Wilson, Brian Bell, Scott Schreiner, and Rivers Cuomo, Weezer.
They're here tonight following the release of their 10th studio album, appropriately entitled The White Album. Give it up for Weezer. All righty then. Thanks for being here, guys. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So the record's been described, and I'm going to let you guys kind of go into this a little bit, as, you know, Weezer at the beach. So you've been making records here in Los Angeles for 20 years or more. Why now a beach record?
Our manager suggested that we hired a new manager, and first thing he said was, you guys should make a beach record. And I was like, oh, yeah, duh.
We live here.
Yeah, we formed in Santa Monica. We've been here for 25 years, yeah. Roughly. And one of my favorite most influential bands for me is the Beach Boys. What are we doing? What have we been doing all these years?
Let's go do that. Yeah. But you've said, and I want to get the band's reaction too, that there's a dark side to the beach. Especially if you go down in my neighborhood in Venice, it's, you know, it can... Hold on now. I like where I live, but it can be a little bit ugly.
Yeah. Well, for me, there's pretty much a dark side wherever I am. there's bright and dark. I like to mix it up. So yeah. Traditionally, I guess beach music is considered pretty bright and happy. Mm-hmm. But I always appreciated in the Beach Boys there was some melancholy underneath it all. So I was very excited to do Weezer's take on the whole beach thing and see what we could find on the underside.
Yeah, and I think you did that. And the interesting thing is, so the critical response to this point has been very positive.
71 on Metacritic.
Somehow I knew you were going to say that, and I needed to ask you about this. So you are very much engaged in sort of fan and critic reaction.
I go through different phases.
Yeah.
I guess in recent years, I'm definitely paying attention. I wouldn't say the cart is leading the horse, or we're not following them too much,
right.
But I like to listen to everybody's opinion and take it all in for sure.
Yeah, and Patrick, I read something where you said you might have been in Europe or something, you were playing, and you realized that the record had made an impact because it had not been out that long, and fans were singing the lyrics back to you guys.
That has happened, yeah. So that's positive.
Yeah, I mean, is that your best indication generally that people are picking up on it, that they're singing it back to you?
I don't know. I don't listen to what people have to say. I mean, I do, but not really.
Right. Fair enough.
Well, we've been touring all summer.
Yeah.
So like 3 months.
Yeah.
And that's like every night you're in front of 10, 15,000 people.
Sure.
And that's kind of the only reality that matters. So you really want those people to be singing your songs back to you. And if they're not, then you kind of go into panic mode and let's try to do something better next time, or let's see if we can tweak the show.
Your interaction with your audience is such that on this record, I think you had solicited random beats from listeners and audience members that you would use.
On this album, we didn't involve the audience, but I would get a hold of like folders on hard drives of just tons of beats and stuff. And
yeah.
I'd go through those and see if anything kind of triggered something.
Mm-hmm. You worked with Jake Sinclair, and I want to ask you guys about him. Jake, who I think you may have been introduced to by Brendan Urie. Was that how you got introduced to him?
That's not how we first met him. He was actually like the engineer on a record we made in 2009 called Ratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like this 23-year-old surfer kid, and we didn't really think anything of him, but then I bumped into him about a year and a half ago, and he was like all grown up, 30 years old, wearing a suit and a new haircut. And he said he had his own studio. So I went there and recorded a demo for the song California Kids, which is the first song on the White Album. And it sounded incredibly cool. So we just thought, let's get the whole band in here, see what happens. And next thing you know, the album's done.
Two things about that. Number one, he was in, if I'm correct about this, he was in a Weezer cover band.
Yeah, he was in a Weezer cover band back in high school called Wanna Beezer.
That sounds so dark when you guys laugh like
that. But so if I understand correctly, and I want to get the band in on this, Rivers made a conscious decision not to micromanage the recording process.
No. As a songwriter, my first instinct is always to micromanage, and you know, I've learned from experience that can actually do more harm than good. But it wasn't my idea this time around. It was actually Jake's, I think, or maybe even our managers. They're like, let's get Jake in with each of the band members one-on-one so they have time to craft their parts without Rivers, you know, micromanaging.
And they
just kind of did it, and then they played pretty much the finished product for me. And at that point, when I heard everything all together, it was like, oh yeah, this sounds incredible, cool.
So Scott,
me. Hi.
Hi.
What's going on?
So in that process, where now you're off working with Jake, you know, apart from anybody else in the band, how was that helpful?
No, it was cool because Jake's an amazing bass player, and I would play a bunch of stuff and you'd be like, okay, that's cool. Let's remember that. That was super cool. Let's work on that. I'd play it a few times and we'd go through and he'd be like, all right. And he would just kind of help me, you know, finish the kind of thoughts that I had. Cause I never really play the same thing twice in a row. I kind of come from that school where like every time we record it, I'll do it a little different.
Hmm.
So, but he really helped me like pick out the best parts and make little hooks out of them and repeat these phrases. So I don't know. I think it's some of the coolest bass that I've done. I love working with Jake. He was really fun.
Yeah.
Brian, what the process for you? How did that how did that work? I didn't mean to wake you up there, but
I had about 10 ideas for each song, maybe more, and I would just go through with Jake. I got this idea for this verse, like maybe 5 different ideas, and Jake was good at arranging those ideas in kind of ways that I might not have thought of. So once we started on that kind of working pattern, it came really easy to do the rest. I think the first song we did was Thank God for Girls. We both were in a lot of pressure on that one. He was under a lot of pressure to like kind of produce a hit for us. And I was under pressure because of the first song of the record that I worked on. And we got in a little argument. And it was one of those arguments that makes the relationship stronger. You know? There was apologies and, you know, that kind of thing.
What was there a fair amount of that sort of push and pull between you guys and Jake in terms of the direction maybe he wanted to take the band and where you thought you were going?
He was clear. He was like, we're going to make my favorite Weezer record.
Huh. Right. Okay.
Yeah, and then I'd be like, hey, let's make this kind of crazy sound here and we'll do this. He's like,
No.
We're not doing that.
Yeah. No, we want a bass guitar. And I was like, come on, man. We've done bass guitar on every record. Like, let's try some different stuff. He's like, maybe the next record.
I think that argument I had with him was really important to clear the air and like kind of let all those anxieties rest. And then it came really easily. And all my ideas were put on there. And, you know, new vocal ideas came up. We came up with things together. And now we have a very good working relationship.
But sure.
It took that kind of ugly moment to get there.
Hmm. Rivers, did you have some ugly moments with Jake?
I don't know. I guess I saw him as like the conservative force in the room. Like he's just a super fan and he really wants it to sound like the records he heard in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of on the other end of the spectrum where I just want to storm into the future and try things I never tried before.
Yeah.
So it's good to have both forces in the room.
Yeah. I think you called and Brian was talking about Thank God for Girls. You've referred to that as pretty experimental. How so?
Well, I mean, it's an unusual groove, first of all, that that feel to the song. It sounds nothing like what we would have done on the Blue Album or Pinkerton in the 90s. It's in a minor key, which is, we almost never have songs in minor keys. And then in the verse, I'm kind of rapping, kind of talking. I don't know what it is, that thing. And it doesn't rhyme. It's very stream of consciousness. It's hard to understand what I'm trying to say. I don't know. It seemed pretty unique to me.
Yeah. Did you guys feel that was kind of a departure, the Thank God for Girls?
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, the reaction to it has been positive.
Yeah, lyrically, it's really cool. And it's fun to see people singing along. And like, are they going to know these lyrics about the popcorn and the all these weird things being said? And they kind of do.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated.
Sometimes better than I do.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Okay, I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun, such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid back appeal and down home vibes. As a dad of seven kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th, just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
And you, I've read things where you've been on tour for a while here, and there's, you know, opportunities to give you particularly a break from singing every song during the set. Is that, you know, kind of helpful for you guys to break that up a little bit so you're not necessarily carrying the load for the entire show?
Yeah, every day I would watch the previous night's show on a video, and the one thing that kept coming up is I like. As a listener, as a viewer, I like to see a variety. I like to see things changing. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely encourage the guys to take over the spotlight for a minute, come up with something, a bass solo, or here, Brian, here's a light-up guitar, play a guitar solo by yourself. I just enjoy that as a viewer.
Yeah.
And it does give me a break from my voice.
Right. How do you guys feel about stepping out in front? How does that work for you?
It's awful.
It's definitely a little scary. It's not an ego thing. It doesn't matter if I'm singing the song or Scott's singing the song. Wherever Rivers is, that's where people are looking.
Yeah.
Except for this one show and this one person. I remember in Portland, Oregon, this one girl about 12 years old, she would not, she locked eyes with me the whole time.
Steady.
Rivers was standing right here. And it was a moment we had.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Clearly. Well. And I can tell you're still talking about it. So, yeah.
No, that's the kind of energy that when you see these young people like getting into your music, that's what you're, why you do it almost. It's an energy that, I'm sorry, but older people don't have.
Hey,
we
hey,
don't.
Hey, watch yourself now. Watch
Steady.
Yourself. Somebody on this stage is old. It's funny, you're talking about, you know, audience reaction, and one of the things that seems to be a constant for you guys is not necessarily wanting to alienate your audience in terms of kind of giving them music that maybe they would expect from you, but also continuing to push forward. Is that kind of always an internal conflict?
Yeah. Yep, that's the conflict right there.
I'm with it, man. I'm just pushing forward. I'm getting
into it. You're not as concerned with what goes on with the audience.
I feel like if we're having a lot of fun, that will be reflected. So,
well, one of the things that
and it's not just between us and the audience. It's between the four of us, or the four of us and the producer.
Well, one of the things that you've mentioned is because of the relationship you have with your audience, which is kind of remarkably interactive, that they allow you to kind of take a step. Is that like the best place you could be as an artist?
Yeah, I think so. Like maybe Radiohead has that. Seems like their audience expects them to put out something nothing they've ever done before, which is pretty cool.
Right, right, right. Do you feel you have that sort of latitude?
I don't. I think that's pretty rare. I don't know many artists that have that besides Radiohead.
Hmm.
So no.
Yeah.
We can do it, man.
But Scott, I really like your glasses.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Super cool.
Thank you. It's good to look at the world through rose-colored glasses.
I like them.
It's important. So Rivers, one of the things I wanted to ask you about in reading some stuff for this interview, you maintain a rather kind of meticulous spreadsheet, I guess, of lyric fragments, song titles. I mean, even going so far as, you know, what a good first line would be. And is this a place you always go to when you're writing songs, or maybe just when you're stuck?
I'm just constantly changing, and I always think, like, I finally figured it out. This is how I'm going to do it. And then you ask me a month later, and it's something totally different. But I do have things that I come back to, a stockpile of lyrics. And yes, now it's on a Google spreadsheet, and it's every line is tagged, so I can sort, like, I'm looking for a first line that rhymes with Kate and that has 10 syllables. So, and it's giant. I have thousands of lines now. So yeah. If you're ever stuck and you need a line, you can just...
He's got them.
I may call you up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In referring to this record, you said there was a fair amount of kind of cutting and pasting. So were you taking from that and sort of figuring out what fit in what sequence?
Sometimes I would. There's a song called Summer Lane and Drunk Dory. Mm-hmm. And I did a podcast called Song Exploder all about that song. And I talk in great detail about how all the pieces came together. So in some cases, I would take some lines from that spreadsheet. And in other cases, I would go to my journals and find like a page of stream of consciousness about something that happened the day before at my daughter's second grade graduation party, something like that. And maybe I might go to just some like story online. And or a book I had been reading, maybe Ernest Hemingway. Mm-hmm. And then I just start moving lines around and putting it all together until it tells a new story.
Yeah. There, much was made about your joining Tinder to, not in the ways that you might be thinking, but in an effort to, you know, spark some thinking about songwriting, you know, feelings about, you know, meeting women or whatever it might be. And what I want to get the band's reaction, because you've been doing this for two decades or so. You got a family now, you got kids. Things that matter to you now may be a little bit different than they were 20 years ago to a certain degree. And I'm wondering if you guys start to bust him on if there are song ideas that maybe skew a little, shall we say, old.
Old, no. Meaning like
if we start talking about
family,
you know,
things,
yeah,
and
yeah,
things
taking
like
the
that.
Kids to, you know, to school for, you know, parent teacher conferences.
I think I bring that up, don't I?
Yeah.
Did you write a lot of PTA songs? I don't know.
I mean, Brian will definitely, he helps me with the lyrics a lot if I'm going out into like an unrelatable topic.
Right.
But more often, I think I overcompensate and write things that sound too young. And, you know, they'll nail me for that, too.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I just wrote a song for the Monkees for their latest album.
Yeah.
And they're in their 70s. So it was the first time I wrote a song for someone. And, I mean, I was writing naturally from a 45-year-old point of view. And they thought it was too young sounding. So I had to change it to make it even older.
That's fantastic.
Usually other artists want me to write younger.
Yeah. So fair warning here. Eventually we're going to come to the house for some questions. So working with Jake on this record, it's been out. The reaction has been really positive. Work with him again?
Well, that's a big question right now.
What's the central issue to that?
I'll work with Jake. I love Jake.
We all love Jake. He's great.
Yeah.
Is he too much of a Weezer fan, like 90s Weezer fan?
I see. Okay.
Is he the guy that can help us do something completely crazy and different? Because that's what we want to do.
That's what you want to do?
Yeah.
Seems to make him panicky when we start doing stuff that's un-Weezer-ish.
Yeah.
Although he did produce a song we just put out called I Love the USA, which is a very radical departure and sounds nothing like anything we've ever done before. So I think that was him saying, look, I can be really different if you want.
So this record generally could be categorized as more of a classic Weezer record. And the next one is going to be something that would not necessarily be recognized as such.
I think that's a pretty safe bet. I mean, it's really hard to predict the future with Weezer.
Yeah.
But I hope that's where we're going.
Yeah, I think it'd be great. We all have a lot of ideas. We're all into some new sounds and new ways to make music, and sure, we're excited about doing something different.
Yeah. So you guys have been together for, you know, a couple of decades, and you know, I'm wondering at this point, what have you learned about being in a band?
Just to be nice. Be nice to people. It's
That's
easy.
Good.
Just be really nice.
That's good.
It's harder than it sounds.
Yeah. Well, in the music business, that's not surprising. Actually.
Be respectful for everyone's talents.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's pretty...
Keep talking.
Keep talking.
Yeah.
Communication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And definitely, you know, together we're much greater than mm-hmm. apart. So
yeah.
Luckily, we haven't made the mistake of trying to go separate ways.
How do you think you in particular have evolved as a songwriter over time? Because you've clearly spent a lot of time thinking about it, looking at it, kind of analyzing it. How do you think you've evolved?
I guess I think one thing that's changed, not just for me, but for music in general, is it's way more collaborative as far as songwriting goes. Mm-hmm. My generation came up and it was all about like the great genius individual, Kurt Cobain or whoever it is. Mm-hmm. And you just hardly ever see that anymore. It's all about bringing different people together from different worlds and seeing what happens.
Yeah.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Okay, I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun, such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid-back appeal and down-home vibes. As a dad of 7 kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th, just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
And you've been out with touring with Panic at the Disco,
yeah.
Who actually Brendan will be here on Monday, and you co-wrote Victorious.
Yeah.
Are you a different songwriter when you collaborate? Are you someone different?
No. I'm only at my best when I'm just kind of doing my thing, being myself. Mm-hmm. And generally, that's kind of why another artist would come to me. They don't want me to try to be like a hit writer, so they just want something of what I'm doing. And oftentimes I'll present an idea that I had been working on for Weezer anyway. And that was the case with Victorious. Yeah. Nice going. Well, usually it's like a song I'm writing for Weezer and then it doesn't work for Weezer. So then I'll
yeah.
somebody else will end up. But you know, remember that song "Magic" by with B.O.B. That I was trying to write a Weezer song.
You guys get disappointed by that?
We actually recorded "Magic." Yeah.
Oh, there's
a
Weezer
version. The producer Jack Knife Lee was like, "We're never doing this song," and that was the end of Jack Knife Lee.
No, we don't get to.
I want Weezer to have as much success as possible with songwriting.
There's plenty of songs to go around. I'm super happy for any great song that makes it out there. Whoever's best, most ready to sing it, and it works out great. That's awesome.
Yeah. I keep going back to production a little bit because it's such an interesting collaboration between a band and a producer. You've worked with names who people would know, Rick Ocasek or Rick Rubin. This process, I think you've all said, was remarkably fast.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that was because of the working relationship with Jake or something else.
Yeah, it was definitely Jake. And our new managers, they just came in with tons of ideas and energy. And maybe it's a generational thing, too. It's just the way younger producers are working now. It's really fast and it's fun and easy. And
it just seems like that's the tour we're on. We started trying little different things here and there in some of the older songs.
Yeah.
And Pat's kind of similar with me where we'll rarely play the same thing two nights in a row. So.
Right.
I don't know. It still seems kind of exciting and a little bit dangerous.
Yeah, yeah.
Say It Ain't So has never felt old.
Why?
Because it's such a powerful, great song.
Uh-huh.
A song I think we'll play every time we ever play a live show.
Yeah. And as I've said throughout the interview, your interaction, your relationship with your fans is such that it seems like no matter how popular the song or how many times you've played it, it's exciting to continue kind of that dialogue with your audience. You guys feel that way?
It's the energy of the crowd. It's the energy of youth. It's something that we're very lucky to experience in what we do.
Yeah.
And we still connect with youth. And I'm telling you, that's just nothing like it.
It's very ageist.
Yeah. So I said before, we're going to take a couple questions from the house. Yes, right here.
Going back a little ways, but you guys did the front-to-back show a couple of times with the Gibson, the Pinkerton, and it was a trend at that time. Everybody was doing it, mainly the older bands. So what was your reason for doing those?
Anniversary.
Yeah. Kind of like 20-year anniversary of the Blue Album.
Was it?
Maybe.
No.
Mm.
There's something like that. I can't remember.
Pinkerton.
Well, we had a song called Memories.
Yeah, I think that kind of sparked it.
No, I think it was.
We don't remember.
It was kind of the original idea was by popular demand, and at first I was like, "You want us to go back and play more old songs?" But as it turned out. Once we got into relearning and rehearsing all that stuff, it was incredibly fun because, they're kind of new songs because we never get to play them, especially most of Pinkerton. It's like we did a few months of touring in 96 and 97, and that was it. And then we never played those songs again for 13, 14 years. So it was incredibly fun to play them. And they're such a good rock band type of songs.
Who else? Yes, in the back, right in front of the board.
Oh, they were in smaller venues, which were packed with people who knew every word of those songs. So that was just like a dream come true for us. When we were touring, opening for No Doubt in 97, nobody knew those songs, and it was really depressing.
Yeah, in the back. Go ahead.
Thanks, guys, for making a great record. And it's not just like it's an immediately great record. It's not a has to grow on you great record. So thanks for that.
Thank you for saying so.
Thank you.
Curious, though, with the whole kind of beat state, have any of you guys met or talked to either currently or in the past any of the Beach Boys?
No. I think one time I tried to contact Brian Wilson through music business people and said, hey, if you'd ever like to write a song, that would be awesome. And never heard back. And that's cool. But Brian and I
said, yeah, we have a connection with the Beach Boys, a piano teacher named Elmo Peeler, who also does string arrangements.
So he was the Beach Boys road keyboardist.
He was the touring musician who played all the Brian Wilson parts when Brian Wilson didn't tour. So there's our connection with
He has all the keyboard transcriptions, and he came and taught them to me and Brian. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Who else? Yes, right here. Lewis? Sorry, my bad. Right there.
I just want to say thanks for all the great albums. I've been listening since 94. You guys are amazing. I look forward to all your new albums. But I have a question for Brian. The Relationship album was so awesome. I'm just wondering if you have another album coming out.
I have another record finished. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for saying so. When it's coming out, I don't know.
Got time for one or two more. Yes, sir, right there. Yep, yep.
I think big Weezer fans love your last two records a lot. And I was wondering if there's any unreleased B-sides from the White Album.
Yeah, they're all coming out real soon, but we're not supposed to say how or when, but yeah.
Look this for them year. Wherever.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they're incredible.
Right there.
We went on the first Weezer cruise. Might we get another?
Weezer cruise. What do you think?
It came up again, and we decided not to do it.
But there's plenty of other cruises.
Maybe we can do something like it that's not at the sea, too. And on a boat, you know, somewhere else, something else.
Yeah, Weezer Camp, that would be fun.
Okay. We'll do something cool.
Yeah.
Okay, we got time for one. Yeah, by the soundboard.
Okay, this is a production question. Did you guys cut any records to tape?
Yeah, first three records. First four, actually.
Did
first.
The way you guys cut the studio is going to visual and like being able to micro edit your performances. Does that affect the way your albums?
That change things?
I think it affected music all over the world, actually.
It can totally. Yeah. I spent lots of time because I get all geeked up about the way things sound. We would flip between the tape and then Pro Tools back and forth, and honestly, it was hardly any different because it was coming from tape going into Tools. So it was like, it was very close.
And it seems like with Pro Tools, we could get everything really perfect. And we experimented with that, with everything being right on the kind of grid. And that then like we did that. And then a couple records later, we're like, all right, let's, especially with Rick Ocasek, we're like, just get in there and tear it up. He'd be like, that was great. I was like, are you going to move it around? He's like, no, I'm not really going to move it around much. So then I find that a lot more exciting sounding personally.
Yes, right there.
Okay, so Weird Al did a cover of Buddy Holly, and at first it was proven that it wasn't. Why did you decide to pull from that?
Where did you get this information?
Yeah, I didn't even know this.
This is in 1995, I think. Yeah.
What was it called?
I never approved it.
It was Buddy Holly. It was a polka rap song.
Yeah. He doesn't have to get approval. He could just put it out, but he's a really good guy, and he sent it to me and said, would you be cool if I put this out? And I listened to it, and it was a medley of the current alternative hits. Like, I remember Nine Inch Nails was on there, but done kind of polka style, and they were all incredibly funny. And then suddenly he starts playing Buddy Holly, and it just sounded like Buddy Holly. It wasn't remotely funny. So I was like, I don't think that's really funny, so probably shouldn't put it out. In retrospect, who cares? Just put it out. So if you're listening, Weird Al, go ahead and put it out.
Go ahead and put it out. All right. So on this tour, I read something about that you developed a computer program to generate randomized set lists.
I want to.
Yeah, but you haven't done that yet.
I'm taking a computer science class now, CS50, through Harvard. It's the most popular online class in the world. It's really incredible.
Yeah.
But I haven't yet learned how to make a automatic set list generator.
Okay. Well, we'll save that question for when that happens.
We used to use Dungeons and Dragon dice.
Yeah.
Well, I understand there were a number of random different ways that you generated set lists.
And each song had if it was a hit song, it had more of a higher chance of being in the set.
It was weighted.
Than a lesser known song.
How did that turn out?
We had some pretty crazy songs.
We had some really weird shows. Yeah. But it was exciting because it'd be like, oh man, we have to learn that song. We'd be like backstage, how does this go? Me and Brian would be like, wait, no, it's like this. Like getting off the record. I don't know. I like stuff like that. It's exciting.
Well,
there's a lot of downtime people don't, I think, realize from sound check to the show. Like, you're sitting there twiddling your thumbs for a lot of it. And it's nice to actually have something to intellectually do. And then if it's to learn a song before, it's kind of makes the time go by faster, at least.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you guys for not only coming, but putting up with a slight fire drill in the middle of the Q&A. That was awfully thoughtful of you. So, ladies and gentlemen, Weezer.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with Weezer. Have a listen to their latest album, Pacific Daydream, and decide for yourself if they've pushed themselves in a new direction. And that's your required listening for today. We're coming to you with fresh episodes every Thursday. We're on all the socials at Grammy Museum. If you're coming to Los Angeles, I do hope you'll come see us, perhaps even join us for a future program. All the info is at our website, GrammyMuseum.org. Many thanks to the team that makes this podcast happen. Jason James, Justin Joseph, Jim Canella, Lynn Sheridan, Miranda Moore, Callie Weissman, Len Brown, Michael Rohrbacher, Jason Hoke, Chandler Mays, Nick Stumpf, and everyone at How Stuff Works. For required listening, I'm Scott Goldman.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.